This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, our periodical update on U.S. politics and campaign 2016. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. It seems to be the summer of the political outsider. The surging candidacies of Donald Trump on the Republican side and Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side indicate that many Americans are dissatisfied with the status quo and seek a certain degree of authenticity in their political leaders. What does this mean for the presumptive Democratic frontrunner, Hillary Clinton, who is still reeling from suspicions over her use of a private email server to send official messages while she was Secretary of State? And what of Jeb Bush, who is facing stiff competition from Donald Trump, who, despite his statements bordering on bigotry and misogyny, continues to lead in the Republican opinion polls? The brother of the former president and former governor of the state of Florida was supposed to be the Republican frontrunner. What's going on? We'll ask our political analysts. Igor Volsky is contributing editor of thinkprogress.org. That's a progressive political blog affiliated with the Center for American Progress. And Nathan Gonzalez. He's editor and publisher of the Rothenberg and Gonzalez Political Report. And that's a nonpartisan newsletter covering the U.S. House, Senate, and gubernatorial campaigns, as well as presidential politics. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Nathan Gonzalez, I'd like to begin with you. Let's talk about the so-called Trump factor, Donald Trump, whom we've seen recently in this much televised and much watched GOP debate. What does it say that he is leading in the polls?
Well, I think it's clear that Donald Trump has tapped into a segment of the Republican electorate that likes his style. They like it brash, in their mind, a tell-it-like-it-is style, and that is appealing to about 20% of the primary electorate. And I think those people are valuing that style above all else. They're willing to look past personal issues or look past issue positions that he has held for contrary to the Republican Party. And so that's what he is tapping into. But I think there's another way to look at the polls. I mean, Trump has shown that, you know, he's proud to tell us that he's leading in the polls at every chance, but at least 75 to 80% of Republicans are not choosing Donald Trump. They're just divided among the 16 other candidates that are running for president. And so I wouldn't put too much stock in the polls right now. The Trump candidacy has gone longer than what I thought it was going to go.
Igor Volsky, do you think that his candidacy has gone a bit longer than everyone had expected? What does it mean, even if he isn't going to actually be the nominee for the Republicans? What does it mean, his standing in the Republican polls?
Yeah, he surprised a lot of people, and his numbers continue to shock political pundits, certainly, and even some Republican voters. But the numbers are mostly meaningless. You look at polls 4 years ago, and President Newt Gingrich was leading in Iowa then. Certainly, that meant very little. He didn't win Iowa. He came in, you know, at the bottom of the pack in Iowa. And so this early on, it has actually very little meaning for who can be the nominee, who can be president. And so I think, yes, the key here is that he's tapped into this discontent that people have with Washington, with politics as usual. And if you look at the other side of the aisle, Bernie Sanders, while the two men have very little in common, Sanders certainly has an appeal of being the anti-politician, of saying things simply, clearly, and as he sees them without this kind of political maneuvering that a lot of Americans on both sides of the aisle, I think, are really fed up with.
Back to you, Nathan Gonzalez, to talk a little bit more about the other side of the aisle. Bernie Sanders, the senator from Vermont, Democratic senator, challenging Hillary Clinton in the primary season. What do you make of him? He seems to be attracting huge crowds. I think Hillary Clinton is rather envious of that.
Similar to what Igor was saying about the polls, I wouldn't put too much stock in the predictive value of crowds, particularly when the crowds are in places they're not in early states, whether it's the Pacific Northwest or even his showing in New Hampshire. I mean, New Hampshire is an early state, but Vermont is not that far from New Hampshire. And the question is, how does Bernie Sanders do in other early states? And I think if we rewind to 2008, where Senator Obama was drawing large crowds, Senator Obama, I don't think, won the 2008 primary because of the large crowds. It's because he had a robust campaign operation that I think strategists that were better than Hillary Clinton strategists. And I'm not convinced that Sanders has anywhere near the national campaign infrastructure to really put this into a serious race. I think some Democrats like what they're hearing from Bernie Sanders, but when it comes time to make a choice, I just have a hard time believing he's going to be there.
Indeed. So, Igor, Bernie Sanders doesn't have the national campaign infrastructure, but he is accomplishing something. What is he doing with respect to Hillary Clinton? Some say he's forcing her to move a little bit more toward the left or adopt some of the positions closer to him, which are perhaps closer to the left than she would normally.
Yeah, I think he's highlighting some key issues. So income inequality, both Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren has really pushed Hillary Clinton into making this a big issue, changing her rhetoric from what we heard when she ran in 2008. College affordability is a big issue that Bernie Sanders has talked a lot about, that she recently came out with a comprehensive plan for. So certainly, I think both Bernie and Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts, who's not running, succeeded in some ways in pulling Hillary Clinton to the left. But we saw in recent days Bernie Sanders being attacked by portions of the progressive movement, people affiliated with Black Lives Matter, immigration advocates, gun safety advocates who are unhappy with some of his positions on those issues. So in some sense, he's certainly the standard bearer in this political presidential race of progressivism. But the movement as a whole may be kind of learning about parts of Bernie Sanders that they may not be so satisfied with.
I think one thing that's also important to remember is that over the last three or four cycles, there's a civil war in the Republican Party that is continuing. And I think there's a growing divide in the Democratic Party. But because Democrats control the White House, there's President Obama, that kind of smooths some of the things over. If Democrats happen to be out of the White House in the near future, I think you'll see that divide and that fight for the soul of the party really kind of bubble up. But the Sanders candidacy, maybe a little bit of a preview into what might be ahead.
All right. Well, let's continue on the topic of the Democrats and Hillary Clinton in particular. She has some negatives, obviously. She just turned over to the Justice Department her email server that housed her personal account that she used while she was Secretary of State. To what extent is this going to continue to dog her, do you think, Nathan Gonzalez? And what other negatives? And will they outweigh some of the positives that she represents?
I think right now, when it comes to Hillary Clinton emails, it's a polarizing issue. You've already made up your mind about whether you trust her or not. I think the question is whether a further investigation brings something new to light that would sway people in the middle. Right now, I don't think it's going to be a defining factor, but if it continues on and there are more revelations and it hurts the trust that people have in her, then it could be a factor.
It certainly doesn't help. It doesn't necessarily hurt yet. But I think if Republicans can really frame it in this idea of Hillary Clinton's not trustworthy, which her numbers on trustworthiness with Democrats or the general election voter aren't where they should be, I think the campaign thinks it could be a real problem for her. And again, those are themes that the Obama campaign successfully exploited in 2007 and 2008. It's part of the reason why she lost the nomination back then. And certainly her behavior with these emails, even if we are to believe her, in some ways feeds into these preconceptions that Hillary Clinton is the quintessential politician who, you know, you have reason not to necessarily trust and believe.
Well, certainly back to the Republicans. So, Nathan Gonzalez, what about Jeb Bush? Obviously, the brother of George W. Bush and, of course, his father. I mean, we're talking about a dynasty again. He's coming out with a forceful speech on foreign policy, particularly with the war in Iraq. Some are sort of questioning, especially on the Democratic side, why he is blaming Obama and, by association, Hillary Clinton for the debacle we're seeing now in Iraq, when in fact it was his brother who led the U.S. invasion. So where does he stand in the pack?
I think Governor Bush is in the top tier of Republican hopefuls. I actually don't think there's a front runner. I don't think Donald Trump is a front runner. Even though Bush has the legacy factor, I've never considered him the front runner. I think Bush is in there with Governor Scott Walker, Senator Rubio. Maybe you put now Governor Kasich and Senator Cruz in there, depending on how large you want that top tier to be. I think Bush's strategy is similar to Romney's strategy. So his brother joked about him being the tortoise and the hare. Just try to outlast everyone else. And as everyone else runs out of money, sticks one or both feet into their mouth, you know, be the last man standing. And I think that's still Bush's strategy. And I think that's what it's been from the beginning.
Now, Nathan, I didn't hear you say the name Carly Fiorina, the sole woman in the 17-candidate primary field among the Republicans. She performed quite well in the so-called second-tier Republican debate. This is that so-called cocktail hour debate, the one that was before that, the larger and later one. How would you rate her chances?
Well, I think Carly Fiorina is maybe one of the better communicators that the Republicans have right now. I still think she comes up against that campaign, the infrastructure issue that I was talking about with Trump, that I still believe you have to have a robust national operation in order to pull off victory in the early states and the states further in the calendar. But she's going to be a voice in this debate, I think, for much of the campaign. Where she ends up, does she end up on a ticket? Does she end up with some other prominent role? It feels like Republicans are going to need to find a place for her. I just don't see it leading the ticket right now.
Igor Volska, your assessment of Jeb Bush and his attempt now to carve out a place for himself with respect to foreign policy, Carly Fiorina, or any of the other candidates in the Republican field?
Yeah, I think Bush's Iraq strategy is interesting because, of course, it goes after Hillary Clinton's time as Secretary of State and attacks her on foreign policy, where Republicans see a lot of vulnerability given what's happening in the world. But it's also a dangerous one. It's dangerous for Jeb Bush, whose brother not only started the Iraq War, but Jeb Bush himself cheerfully supported it, could face some real problems with an electorate that is still in some ways conflicted about the war, but in many ways very disappointed by it and weary of it. And so he, I think, runs the risk tying himself closer to the failure that was Iraq. And I think when pressed on what he would do differently, either now in Iraq or against the more general threat of ISIS, his solutions aren't too much different from what the Obama administration is doing. And so as he tries to kind of, I guess, increase his experience rhetorically with foreign policy that looks similar to what Obama's doing, I think it remains to be seen whether or not that kind of talk will be able to attract voters.
Any comments on any of the other
candidates? Well, you know, Carly Fiorina saw a bump after the first debate. Well, she was in the 5 p.m. debate, but she did well there. And now I think she's, what, 10% in Iowa or New Hampshire or somewhere. And again, she's part of this growing number of Republican candidates who are not of D.C. She's never held office. She's from the business world. And the fact that her stock is now rising speaks to, yes, the fact that she's an effective communicator, but also at least Republican voters are really at this point looking for an outsider. They don't like both chambers of Congress, and they certainly don't like this president.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Igor Volsky. He's contributing editor of thinkprogress.org, and that's a progressive political blog affiliated with the Center for American Progress, a think tank based here in Washington. And Nathan Gonzalez, he's editor and publisher of the Rothenberg and Gonzalez Political Report. And we're talking about the candidates and issues in the run-up to the 2016 U.S. presidential campaign. And this is a reminder that you can listen to Encounter online as a podcast. Please visit our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or keep up with us on Facebook. Here's a shout-out to a loyal listener, Elvis Sam from Kumasi, Ghana. And if you want to hear your name on the show, please send us an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us on Facebook. Well, back to you, Nathan Gonzalez, to talk a bit more maybe about the so-called Democratic field. You know, there's talk about Vice President Joe Biden sounding out friends and family to see whether or not he will make a bid for the Democratic nomination in face of Hillary Clinton's lingering controversies. What are your thoughts?
You know, I don't know the vice president personally, but it must be difficult to be the sitting vice president for 8 years and not be considered more of a contender than what he is. It just must be a difficult thing. In terms of will he or won't he get in, I honestly don't know. But I think that the place that Secretary Clinton is vulnerable is to her left. And that's what Bernie Sanders is showing. And I don't think that's the natural place that Biden would be able to go or want to go. And so I'm not sure what the space there is for him if he decides to run. I think a lot of Democrats and maybe some Republicans, they like Vice President Joe Biden. I don't know if they're willing to make him President Joe Biden.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree the vulnerability is on the left. And I would argue that there is some room for Joe Biden on the left, particularly on foreign policy, where I think Hillary Clinton has very hawkish tendencies, certainly during her time as Secretary of State in places like Libya, for instance, which hasn't turned out as she has hoped. And it's, I think, there that if Biden, in fact, decides to run, that he could make a certain distinction between his approach to those conflicts when he was advising President Obama and hers.
Well, he was the point man on Iraq, evidently, and that didn't turn out too well so far.
It did not.
We'll see about Joe Biden, but certainly Bernie Sanders, there's certainly a lot to watch. But no question that the Republicans seem to be taking up a lot of the media space. Back to you, Nathan Gonzalez. Let's talk about some of the issues that you see as emerging as the major issues in this campaign, and particularly those that the Republicans are championing.
First of all, resumes are an issue. Everyone's trying to carve out their niche in trying to say, I'm a governor, so I have this experience. But in terms of specific issues, some of them haven't changed for Republicans. They're still railing against Obamacare. They're bringing up ISIS. But I don't know that's the specific issues that are really driving the electorate now. It's almost more personality-driven than it is issue-specific.
Well, that's a good point, Nathan. You might want to remind our listeners, too. I mean, some are probably just scratching their heads. Why are you guys talking about the presidential election in 2016? It's over a year away. But
part of the reason why our campaigns are so long is because they're allowed to. A lot of these candidates have been running even for years, let alone just for these last few months. And because it can take a while to put an operation in place. And some of these people don't even have, I would call them, real jobs. I mean, if you're a former Senator Santorum or Mike Huckabee or George Pataki, Jim Gilmore, I mean, these people, they're getting attention by running for president. If they weren't running for president, no one would be paying attention to what they're saying. So there's kind of a public relations element to it that drives the length of the campaign, because the media is just so willing to talk about it for so long.
Turning to you, Igor Volsky, I was searching for the word roadmap, so to speak. So where are we in this roadmap to the primaries, and where we are, why we're talking about all of this so early?
I want to say it's a rare moment that somebody remembers that Jim Gilmore is part of the 17 running for president. So
that might be one of the only ones.
An impressive name drop there. We are very early. We just had the first Republican presidential debate. There's many more to come, although maybe five or six, not as many as we've seen in past cycles. And the Democrats are gearing up to debate in October. There we have former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley, certainly Bernie Sanders, who we mentioned, Lincoln Chafee, the former independent governor of Rhode Island, Jim Webb, is he still running? Former senator and governor from Virginia. And so we're going to have to get through those debates. We're going to have to get through the primaries and caucuses across the country. There you'll have a nominee from each party, and then they'll go at it.
Well, President Barack Obama is still in the White House, and there's still a number of issues on his plate. So let's end and conclude the program by talking a bit about that. So back to you, Nathan Gonzalez. This Iran deal is certainly extremely controversial. One could congratulate the P5+1 for concluding it and so on. But of course, now the American Congress has a chance to look at it. And there will be a vote in September. Where do you think this is going, this issue?
Well, I think Republicans believe that this will be a fundamental issue of the 2016 campaign. Republicans, I think, tend to believe that this was just a bad deal. And I think they plan on running against it, not just at the presidential level, but trying to make it an issue in the fight for the Senate. You know, precisely how the vote breaks down, I'm not sure. You know, they're different in high-profile Democratic exemptions like Chuck Schumer, but Republicans plan to make this an issue in 2016 all the way to November.
Well, Igor Volsky, there's no question that this is a defining moment for the Obama administration. It's the linchpin of his foreign policy. He sees it as a major success. He sees the Congress voting it down as a major defeat, and he has vowed to veto should that occur. He's making the case, he and the administration. Where do you see this going? And we know that most of the Republicans are against this deal. Where do the Democrats stand? We know that Senator Chuck Schumer of New York has come out now against it, but some are saying the numbers are such that that doesn't really matter, that more Democrats would still support it. Where do you see it going?
Yeah, well, the numbers are certainly mushy right now. The White House believes that they have enough to sustain his veto, that if, in fact, the Congress votes down the deal, which they're expected to do, they won't have a two-thirds majority to overrule President Obama's veto, and that this deal will, in fact, go through, will be implemented, and they believe that despite what you hear on the campaign trail from Republicans promising to rip up the deal on day one in the White House, that logistically, that would really be impossible once you get everyone on the same page and parts of this big deal implemented. And Obama certainly, as you point out, sees this as a very big part of his legacy.
Well, Nathan Gonzalez, in addition to the
Iran deal. Obama has made other achievements, at least in his book. Obamacare, the health care law, is fairly robust. There were umpteen attempts and perhaps continue to be attempts to defund it, to repeal it. What other challenges do you think will be made to his legacy?
Well, I mean, Republicans, they're against President Obama almost anything he does. I mean, if he said he wanted to have a turkey sandwich for lunch, Republicans would probably be against it at this stage. But I think the president is comfortable with letting history decide his legacy, that he is pushing for things like Iran deal, Affordable Care Act, and he's gotten these things through, and he believes he'll be correct in the end. And that's one of those things that until these deals play out or legislation plays out, we really won't know their ultimate success or failure for quite some time. In the short term, these are very polarizing issues that are still energizing the Republican base, and we'll see if it energizes the Democratic base when the president isn't on the ballot.
Lee Grovolsky, your think tank, Center for American Progress, has an affiliation with the Democratic Party and the Obama administration. What else do you expect President Obama would like to achieve? Some legislation with respect to climate change, perhaps trade?
Well, certainly he would like to see his trade deal, the TPP, which he fought his own party on very strongly. He would like to see that finally negotiated. It's still in the final stages.
The Trans-Pacific Partnership. And
yes.
Interestingly enough, there we have convergence. The Republicans are actually in favor of that, support the president. So there's one thing,
one
Nathan.
One rare moment.
One thing on which the Republicans agree with President Obama, and his party does not.
And his party does not. And of course,
for some of them, not all of them.
There's always these big ticket items that the president and Republicans like to talk about, like, for instance, tax reform. They all want to do some kind of tax reform. Of course, when you get down to the details, it's nobody wants to close certain loopholes, and they fight about that forever. So I think he understands, look, at this point in his presidency, he has to take executive action. It's what he's done on climate, certainly on immigration, because that turkey sandwich they'll be against and everything else. So he understands, I think, that if there's anything else that he can kind of squeeze out of his presidency, he's really going to have to lead the charge on that.
Back to you, Nathan Gonzalez, because we spoke recently to Kristen Soltis Anderson, the author of The Selfie Vote, talking about the youth vote, the so-called millennial vote. I would like to get your point of view with respect to how important that will be, both here in the primaries as we're running up to getting a nomination for both the Democrats and the Republicans, and also in the general election.
I think younger voters are probably more important in a general election rather than in the Republican primary. The dirty secret about our elections, particularly close elections, is that every demographic matters. One of the key questions is, can Secretary Clinton inspire and motivate young voters in any way close to what Senator Obama was able to do in 08 or even what President Obama was able to do in 12? I don't think she has to do as well as he did, but she's got to come pretty close because she's going to come up against opponents in other demographics.
And let me give you the last word, Igor. Can Hillary Clinton, should she, of course, be the nominee, inspire the youth vote just as her predecessor, or rather just as President Obama has?
Yeah, that's going to be the big test. And the question is, does Bernie Sanders feed it or eat into some of that enthusiasm? That is, does his campaign suck away some of the enthusiasm from Hillary Clinton when it comes to the general election? He has said he's not going to attack her. He's not going to run a nasty campaign. So maybe those young people will ultimately, who supported Bernie, maybe they'll go ahead and vote for Hillary. But yeah, it's going to be a big test. She's very popular right now with African Americans, certainly with women. And the question of young people and white voters, generally white men, who she's also going to need to bring into this coalition to win, that is going to either, you know, sink or swim her presidential ambitions.
And probably the Republicans as well. Yeah. They're the ones, perhaps some say, as does the author, that are most challenged by the millennial vote. But gentlemen, we'll be talking on many more occasions about campaign 2016, and we look forward to having you both. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Igor Volsky, he's contributing editor of thinkprogress.org, affiliated with the Center for American Progress, and Nathan Gonzalez, editor and publisher of the Rothenberg and Gonzalez Political Report. Thanks, gentlemen, for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Glenn Von Calio. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.